People discriminate as much about the way people speak as they do about the color of their skin, but it's more insidious, a subtle form of race and class discrimination that's hard to detect. It's just as real, though, as generations of pidgin speakers in Hawaii have learned. And as she prepares for a one-day summit on pidgin and education tomorrow at Farrington High School, Dr. Christina Higgins, professor of second language studies at UH Manoa, spoke with us about the stigma attached to the way some people use language.
A lot of people know that it's not right to discriminate against people based on their gender or their skin color or their religion. These are sort of ideas that have been circulating in American society for a long time. But language is more indirect, and so a lot of people feel perfectly comfortable correcting people's grammar straight to their face, and also making sort of judgmental comments about how certain accents create certain characteristics even. And, you know, this shows up in media, including Disney films that kids watch. And so, you know, oftentimes the hero of the story, it has an unmarked way of speaking English, but the bad guy always has some marked accent, right? So they sound either Arab, you know, and it goes along with the generation. So it used, they used to sound German or Russian.
Right.
So if you watch the Bond movies, you see that all the bad guys have those varieties. And these days it tends to be Middle Eastern.
Right. That's the enemy du jour.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, this just shows up in everyday life as well. You know, I was born in the state of Georgia, and I like to tell people that because I have pride in being from the South. I lived in North Carolina for a while. I'm a y'all user. And many people are a bit ashamed of having Southern accents when they're not in the South, when they move out of the South. And I just think it's something that we have to fight against constantly.
It's a, you're making a link between language, use of language, and social class in a society that supposedly doesn't have a class stratification system, although, of course, it does.
Yeah.
And a very strong one. And that's how you're identified as to what social class you belong to, right?
It can mark you for sure, and some people feel it pigeonholes them in a bad way. The interesting thing about the way that you speak and social class is that it's not a one-to-one because of human agency, right? So we all know people who are actually quite well-educated and make a lot of money, but their ways of speaking are rather regional, right? Or we might associate them with lower working class ways of talking. And we all know people who are from more modest backgrounds who sound as if, you know, they lived in fancy houses their whole life, but actually they might live in a very modest place and come from nothing.
But if you train yourself to make certain sounds, you can create all kinds of other impressions about yourself.
It's all about sort of who you want to be, who you aspire to be, and how you can use language to help craft that persona. Right.
Well, you know, here's the thing about pidgin that's always fascinated me is the creativity of a lingua franca among people from different cultures who had to find ways of communicating with one another. And, you know, as you said, you're a y'all speaker. And it's a very efficient use of language to be able to say you all as opposed to you individually. Our language, English, offers no other way to say that. So saying y'all, meaning you are addressing a group, is actually a pretty efficient way to express yourself. And I've always loved in pidgin the expression, you'll get used to it.
Yes.
You know, that's that says it very well in a few well-chosen words, right?
Yeah.
There are lots of creative applications of language and merging of language in pidgin.
For sure. You know, and I think that necessity involves creativity, right? So when people from different backgrounds on plantations came together, but in a somewhat limited way, they used what they had. You know, they used the resources at their disposal, and they brought together, you know, Japanese, Portuguese, Hawaiian, English, and put those together to create a way of speaking.
To me, which could easily emerge as a point of pride, as a sign of great deal of creativity without a lot of help.
Yeah, I mean, human language is fascinating to me as a linguist. You know, I it's really amazing the way that people blend language, create new forms. Newer generations of speakers here in Hawaii are constantly fusing English and Hawaiian and Pidgin in ways that their parents may feel sort of is wrong or is losing the originality of these languages, but they're doing it in a way that makes sense to them and expresses who they are, you know, as the current generation.
If you look at the way people spoke in the 17th century, any language you pick, you'd hardly recognize it, right?
It's definitely changed. You know, that's the truth. We can't stop it. All languages change and transform, and it's always because of social and economic and political stuff going on around us.
So how did we get to the point of using it to denigrate people rather than celebrating it as an example of their, you know, endless creativity?
It's a good question. I guess one answer to that is the rise of nationalism, you know, the creation of the nation state. So in places like Japan and Germany and Italy, you know, there are lots of different languages that are spoken, and some people call them dialects. So Italy has multiple languages that many of the speakers themselves don't even think of as languages. But in the early 1900s, you know, one variety of Italian became the language, the Italian language. And before that, it had never been thought of that way. And I think that creates a sense of unity and, you know, national pride, but it also marginalizes everybody who doesn't speak that way historically and sort of naturally. So it creates an inferiority ladder in those societies. And that's what happened in the United States, too.
Well, I also think that probably mass media has a leveling effect, making everybody speak with the same accent, you know, breaking down regional boundaries, yeah?
Yes and no. It has an influence. So, for example, you know, we see people in New Zealand using varieties of American English that they didn't get because they have a lot of American friends. So that comes from media for sure. But we also see a strong maintenance of regional and social varieties. So, for example, African-American English in the U.S. has gotten more divergent in the past 30 years. And it's not because media is doing that. It's because of social and political problems, racism, disenfranchisement. Yeah.
What do you hope to achieve with the upcoming event?
Yeah, so we're having this summit on Pidgin and education. Over the past 12 years or so that I've been working at the University of Hawaii, I've been invited along with some colleagues to talk to teachers in a very ad hoc way. So many times we've been invited to Big Island, all over Oahu, to Kauai. And people are interested. They want to know more about Pidgin. They have some ideas, and some people feel tentatively like they should use it more in school, but they don't know how. And they know that they need to know more. And so I think we've seen that there is a lot of interest, and yet there hasn't been any infrastructure in place to reach a large audience. So this is kind of the first effort to get that dialogue started for a larger audience and then to build from there and, you know, make this more systematic and more, you know, widespread, hopefully across the islands.
Hopefully begin to erase some of the stigma attached.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's interesting. I've done some research in the past 5 years on college students' attitudes towards Pidgin, and a lot of people would say, "Oh, college students don't speak Pidgin," or you know, they certainly don't want to identify with it. And actually, that's the opposite of what we're finding. So we see a big generational shift with pride in Pidgin. So the 19 and 20-year-olds at Manoa know it's a language. They come into our interviews saying, "Oh, I know it's a language, and I know people put it down, but they're wrong." So they come in with that, and so they're actually more enlightened than I presumed. And so I think that's actually really heartwarming.
Dr. Christina Higgins is a professor at the University of Hawaii at Manoa in the Department of Second Language Studies. She's also co-director of the Charlene Junko Sato Center for Pidgin, Creole, and Dialect Studies. A Get Pidgin is a one-day summit on Pidgin and education being held tomorrow from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. at Farrington High School.